It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 553. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit my website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have one voicemail for tonight. And guess what? It's about Windows 10, of course. And I will get to it in a few minutes. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. And Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. So the big topic, obviously, I'm recording this on Thursday evening, July 30th. Well, July 29th, Microsoft released Windows 10. And I'm going to jump right in, talk about Windows 10. I have lots to discuss. I have some great email stories already that you've sent in about the upgrade process. And we're going to see where time is, and if I have time, I will get to some other topics with emails. And, of course, we're going to get to the voicemail. So the first thing, I want to give thanks to two listeners, and Tim, who's Tim369, when he's in the chat, also Rob, they sent me the link to the Windows media creation tool for Windows 10. This is the first link in the show notes for tonight's show, and it's the most important. If you're thinking of upgrading, this is how I recommend it. Download that tool, and you're going to have two options when you run it. You can do an in-place upgrade, or you can create media. And when you check the option to create media, you're going to be allowed to create an ISO that you can then burn to a DVD, or have a USB stick that's at least 4 gigs for capacity, and you can write directly the ISO for Windows 10 Home, Windows 10 Pro, and either the 32 or the 64-bit. Right off the bat, I'm going to make 4 bootable USB sticks and 4 bootable DVDs, so I'm armed. No matter what situation I'm in, I'll be able to go to the Home or Pro upgrade and be able to either install or upgrade, and I'll be able to do it with either media, 32-bit or 64-bit. I really hope to only be using the 64-bit. I used that tool last night on the computer behind me. When anybody who's watching this live, there's a test machine that always gets my battery of tests of anything I'm going to try out. That's my guinea pig machine. I took the media creation tool, downloaded it, and began the install last night. It was a 2-hour process, couple reboots, and it went flawlessly. One error, iDrive, but it's an older version, it's not iDrive, it's iCloud, it's the driver for the Windows driver for syncing your info to your Apple devices through Outlook or doing a photo stream of syncing your photos. iCloud for Windows, the version that I'm using there, does not seem to be working with Windows 10. All the other programs I've tried seem to work. Of course, Office 2013, I would suspect that would work. I've also tried QuickBooks, no issue. Well, at least the one version, version 2013 premium, which is what I have on that system. I've tried SyncBack Pro. That seems to work. I haven't been able to vet it, all the other programs, too much because I haven't had a lot of time. So I only had a couple hours last night after the upgrade. And again, I did an in-place upgrade. And by the way, this is a system that was Windows 7 Ultimate 64-bit. It is one of the licenses that I acquired from TechNet. So I wasn't sure how that was going to upgrade because I never got the Windows 10 app that was announcing the upgrade and allowed me to register for the upgrade. I never got that on this system. But using the media creation tool, no problem. And upgrade it to Windows 10 Pro. So one of the big programs I had to make sure work is Instant House Call. So Instant House Call by default was on this Windows 7 machine for unattended mode. And I'm using it now for Windows 7 to control it. I'm going to go over a couple things. One of the most important options is settings. You have the new icon that's a four-pane window, and if you left-click it, you now get one column of menus, and now you get the apps with live tiles off to the right. One of the first things, go to settings and start taking a look at the different settings. First, you have system, display notification and power. You have devices, networking, personalization, accounts, update and security, privacy, ease of access, and time and language. I'm going to concentrate on update and security right now. As I click that, you have Windows Update. Make sure this is where you check for updates. And I've already checked on this system today, and the only update was for Windows Defender. I was using Microsoft Security Essentials. It automatically converted it to Windows Defender. And that's what I'm using right now for my security on this system because I went from Windows 7 Ultimate directly to Windows 10. Backup, very important here. This is where you can back up using your file history. You can easily pick an external drive, and it actually found my NAS drive, and then you can set it for what options, what files. So if you take a look, these are all of my different directories that it found, and it's going to back up, and then there's an option to be able to add a folder. Very easy to set up a backup, and you can keep your backups forever by default, and then you have options for 1 year, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and then you also can back up every hour, every 20 minutes, every 6 hours, so the default's every hour. I wanted to quickly show everybody how to get your backup immediately going. There's also something nice. If you go to Control Panel, and there's a couple ways you can go to Control Panel, you can right-click and you can pick Control Panel. There's an option, Backup and Restore, and it's the Windows 7. So you don't lose the backup and restore capability that came with Windows 7. You still get that. So I'm glad they left that in. Let's click on recovery. You can reset the PC if you're having issues, and you can choose what you want to do, and it can kind of do a whole refresh. You can go back to Windows 7 for up to 1 month after you upgrade. So you can flip back if you're unhappy going all the way back. And then there's an advanced startup, which is startup from a device or a disk such as USB or DVD, and change Windows startup settings or restore Windows from a system image, and it'll restart your PC. Activation. Always double check this and make sure you have the edition that you're supposed to be getting upgraded to, and that activation Windows is activated. Let's go back. There's a couple more. There's a personalize, and if you go into This is where I found a couple things. One, I could check and change my background and everything, and it looks a little bit like it used to. But here under themes, I thought it was very interesting that this is where I could pick my desktop icon settings. And you can take a look here. This is where you can go click computer, network, recycle bin, control panel. And these are the new icons for those functions. I like the idea of having control panel on my desktop. So I liked checking that. So this is a couple things I just wanted to go over. I wanted to make sure you knew how to back up files. You could go through a restore process if you don't like what's happening. Test all of your devices. The only thing I got a chance to test were my printers, and they all worked fine. And I have a pretty old HP OfficeJet, and it's worked great for printing a test page. A couple other things I want to talk about. The new Microsoft browser, it's a darker blue E, and it's already pinned to the toolbar after the install, and it's Microsoft Edge. That's the new browser. Now, I went looking for Internet Explorer, and it's not obvious to find Internet Explorer. One of the things I wanted to make sure, I have clients that are going to absolutely have to use Internet Explorer. I opened up File Explorer and went right to the C drive, Program Files x86, and Internet Explorer is still there. And there's an IE Explorer EXE. I ran that and then pinned it to my toolbar after it executed. So this way, I knew I could have the good old traditional Internet Explorer. And it happens to be Internet Explorer 11, which was the last version. I was wondering if they were going to go to 12 or not for IE, but clearly they didn't. So IE remained on my system. IE 11 just remained intact. And I know if I have any clients that go through this that needs the traditional IE, I know how to get them back to that and pin it to the toolbar or create a shortcut on the desktop. All programs are called apps now. It's all mixed together. In the Windows 8 world, it was very confusing. You had programs and you had apps. Right now, if you left click on the start menu, you have an option, all apps. So you can click on all the apps, and now you can alphabetically scroll apps mixed in with what was traditionally some of your programs. So they're all now referred to as apps. So that's my quick tour. And I just wanted to let everybody know what was happening with Windows 10. Just a very, very fast overview. I got some great feedback. This is from Rob. Windows 10 upgrade, and then he follows it up with another email after going through this. I have three computers, a desktop with Windows 7, another desktop with Windows 8.1, and an Asus laptop with 8.1. My Windows 7 computer had the Windows 10 upgrade ready to download, so I downloaded and installed the upgrade. It worked great. However, the two Windows 8.1 computers would not do the upgrade. I kept getting the message Microsoft is sending out the update in waves and mine was not ready yet. After doing a search, I found the Windows 10 Media Creation Tool. That's the link I talked about, and he includes it. It gives you the option to upgrade to Windows 10 or create either an ISO or a USB stick to install on another computer. You can create the USB stick, but you do now want to use the USB stick because the Windows 7 or Windows 8 product key will not work. He has some updates to this. You want to choose upgrade. It gives you the option to keep everything or nothing. I chose to keep everything, which is exactly what I did. It worked like a champ. Windows 10 upgrade completed and activated with no problems. I do have a recommendation. What Windows 10 does is gives you a new product key. No, it does not. And he follows up with this. What I recommend is that you use a program like Magic Jelly Bean and grab the Windows 10 product key and print it out and make the USB stick and keep it somewhere where you can reinstall it if you need to. I'm going to try a clean install with the Windows 10 product key to see if it does indeed work, and I'll let you know. One more thing, the installation created a folder called windows.old. Mine was over 25 gig, and you can get rid of the Windows old folder by using disk cleanup and go into the cleanup system files tab and click on remove previous Windows files. Hope this helps. Great show. As usual, keep up the great work, Robert. It's a great first email from Robert, and he brings up that windows.old. That's what that recovery option I was talking about will come into play. Keep it around for a month, since you can easily flip back to Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, whatever you were coming from, if you don't like it. I can't imagine anyone who was at Windows 8 or Windows 8.1 wanting to go back to that. I mean, I can see someone if they went from Windows 7 to Windows 10 and they don't like it. Me, I like Windows 10. And if you're on Windows 8 or Windows 8.1, my recommendation is go for the upgrade. Absolutely go for that upgrade. But if you're Windows 7, be careful. My recommendation is wait a little bit. You have a year to upgrade for free. Why be on the bleeding edge? Let Microsoft come out with some updates. Let's let the dust settle. It's only been out there for 24 hours right now. Let's let it get out there and have hundreds of thousands, millions of people doing it, and let's hear what's going on and take that in and then make a decision to upgrade, unless you're in the business like me. And if you're doing consulting and you're doing the work, absolutely have a test system, have something, because we need to go through it. Because my mantra is, I will go through the pain to avoid my clients going through the pain. Let me suffer and know how to handle the issues so my clients don't have to suffer. So that's why I have to do it. Plus, it's great material for the show. Robert, much later in the evening last night, follows up with email number 2. I had an issue where after I did the upgrade to Windows 10, I could not make the recovery drive. In previous emails, I mentioned using a tool like Magic Jelly Bean in order to grab the product key to do a clean install of Windows 10. However, when I did that on both my desktop and laptop, both keys were the same. And when you try to do a clean install and enter the product key, they don't work. I read online how you can use the Windows 10 media creation tool to create a USB installation media. And when it comes to the product key screen, you can click skip the product key. So I decided to give it a shot and do a clean install. I skipped the product key and installed Windows 10. After the installation, it asked me for a product key. I clicked the option to do this later. It went through and took care of a few things. Then it prompted me again for the product key, and I once again selected do this later. And it gave me a prompt to make this yours and asked me for my Microsoft account information. After I went through it, I checked, and Windows 10 now says it is activated. I am guessing that Microsoft must use your Microsoft account information to activate your copy of Windows 10. Very interesting. We can do a clean Windows install. Don't pick a key, but make sure you have a Microsoft account. That's interesting. I don't know if that's going to work all times, but it worked here for Robert. Robert, thank you for that email. So I'm going to continue with some more emails, and they are relevant here. The first one is from Darren. And Darren recommends a backup program for doing an image. Paragon Software Group, Paragon Migrate OS to SSD 4.0, and it's 1995. He is recommending that. I highly recommend that you do a system image before you dare upgrade. Now, for me, I didn't care on my test system behind me. If it blew up and it didn't work, fine. I can always rebuild it with Windows 7. I'm not worried. I have all my drivers backed up. I have all my data backed up, so I don't care. You got to make sure that you have a backup. Next email. This is good. This is from Travis. And Travis recommends a program. He gives a ringing endorsement for Veeam. And it's an endpoint backup, and it's free. I don't know. I've not used either of these backup programs, but I wanted to throw them out there because they are more options for us to embrace for software for you to back up your system. Remember, if you have Windows 7, it's built in. You can do a full system image. Just plug in an external drive, type backup in the search bar, and you can do a whole system image, but make sure that you generate a repair disk, because you can always boot from that repair disk and put the image all the way back. Plus, what's really nice is that Windows 10, going through the in-place upgrade, we have that option. But I still don't trust that 100%, because you never know if it's going to work perfectly and put you back the way you absolutely want to be in Windows 7. But you got to take the precautions. A series of emails here dealing with consulting topic. They're all from Michael, and he has three emails that I'm going to go through that I think are relevant if you're just starting and getting into the repair or computer business. Hi, Mike. I just started listening to your podcast a few months ago, maybe four of them. Great job. I've enjoyed them all and learned so much with you and Carrie. He's referring to Tech Vets. I know there hasn't been a Tech Vets in a while. I intend to get back on the horse with Carrie after the ChannelCon's CompTIA's ChannelCon next week. So I'm heading to Chicago on Saturday, and then I'll be back on Thursday, which brings up something. Next Thursday night, I doubt if there'll be a show. I'm probably going to be wiped. But I'm going to do a show. So I might do it Friday night or Saturday. So not sure. I'm going to feel it out next week and then watch my Twitter and Facebook feed and find out what's happening for the next show. There definitely will be one next week. It's just not going to be Thursday night. All you need is the know-how to repair and build PCs. What is the Computer Business Kit version 3? Someone told me it's not for me because I will be a one-man computer business. I'm a one-man computer business, and it absolutely is for me. Whoever advised you that, they're 100% wrong, because I'm a single person in the business by myself, and I'm using half those forms for my business. So I'm going to go over that. So the person who advised you, they're wrong. If this is not for a one-person computer business, then what do you think I need for a one-man computer business? I think you need the Computer Business Kit version 3. It's $99, and I have a link that'll be in the show notes. The business kit helps you organize and systemize all of your tasks. Just give you an example. You have engagement forms for home users, engagement forms for business users. You have a backup checklist, a reformat checklist, wireless and internet settings, computer pickup, tune-up checklist. How could this not be for you? There's in the office, if you have a storefront, sure, there's a bunch of forms there, but you have a laptop assembly sheet, game console repair, new computer invoice, regular invoices, terms of service, quotations. You're going to need those things. Maintenance contract sales letter, a problem report, computer maintenance log, on and on. The Computer Business a repair kit version 3 is by Bryce from TechNibble, and it's phenomenal. And I use these forms every day. Do I use every form? No, but I use a stack of them for my business. Why reinvent the wheel if you already can have these forms? I recommend that you should be purchasing that if you're in the business. Okay, next email from Michael here. I wanted to know, what is the prices you normally charge for your work? And if you do buy clients' things versus them buying it yourself, I am on an income that can't be buying $300 and $400 worth of stuff at first as a startup. Then he asked, what is a retainer client? I hear you talk about that often on the show. All right, he has a couple questions here. First, what can you charge? Well, if you're just starting out, you can't charge what I can because I've been in the business for 30 years. I can charge $150 an hour. I don't think you can starting out. Your prices are going to vary based on your experience and what the market can bear. Unfortunately, I know that's not the answer you want to hear, but no one can tell you what to charge. You're going to have to feel it out. I don't know what area you're in. If you're in New York in Manhattan, that's going to be a different than Ottumwa, Iowa, where you might only be able to charge $25 an hour there. I don't know. I'm just using that as an example. You got to feel out, what are the repair costs? Are there big box stores in your area like a Geek Squad? What are they charging for cleaning a system, doing a repair, looking at a computer? You might have to do some investigation there. On buying items, I will only put out small amounts of money. I've been on my own for over 8 years, and I still will not take on 100% of a hardware purchase for a client, even if they've been a client for a long time for me. I make my clients pay 100% upfront for all hardware, unless it's under $100 or it's very inexpensive. I kind of have a cap at like $200. I will not put out the money for hardware. I make my clients pay me 100% upfront for buying the hardware. So why shouldn't you do it? Don't sweat it. And if someone's going to question whether they want to give you the money or not to buy it, you don't want them as a client. Move on. Forget about it. If they're not going to give you the money, what's going to happen when you do pay, when you do buy it and then ask to be paid? They're not going to pay you. So don't do it, and you'll never lose money on that. What is a retainer client? A retainer client is someone that gets priority, that pays for blocks of hours or a monthly fee for my services that are going to happen. I have clients that will pay for the upcoming quarter for support. I do all my retainer clients for quarterly. I have them under contract. Oh, by the way, where are you going to get that sample contract from? Get it from the Computer Business Repair Kit. All right. I put everybody under a contract for those 3 months that are coming out. I give them an invoice. I have clients that are 1 hour. I have clients that are 12 hours per month. My biggest client over the past 2 years, they are 30 to 40 hours a month. My clients vary and the rates vary, but I will offer a discount if anybody signs up for a retainer contract. If you're on retainer with me, I am monitoring your backups every single night or based on your needs, whether it's your workstation or server. I'm watching them and monitoring them and reacting if they don't work. So I have a great backup solution in place. They also get priority when they call over someone that's not on retainer. So that's what a retainer is. And it's almost like an attorney where they'll put like they'll say, hey, they want, you know, $100,000 for a big case, or they want, you know, $10,000 retainer. And then they'll chop the hours off that retainer, but it's a check that you write up front. Third email from Michael. I want to offer clients an online backup of their files. I want to use OwnCloud or free NAS. I will be willing to buy a server motherboard, and I want to use the two things. So if I want something, I could I can install it versus using a NAS from Newegg or Amazon and get stuck with what they offer. I know there are things like Synology, and I'm just worried about wimpy RAM and blah, blah, blah. He goes on. Michael, maybe I am opinionated like this and very forceful. I think you hosting a backup solution for clients with you just starting out is the biggest mistake you could ever make in your entire life in going into business. You don't have the experience or what I don't even can imagine what your internet service is to be able to offer that. What you want to do is partner with a company that's already doing it and resell their services. Use Vault America, Mozy Pro. There are tons of online backup services. Become a reseller for them and resell someone else's solution where they're on the hook for disaster recovery, for maintaining backups of the backup, security. You do not want to enter into this. Now, if you're going to offer a local backup for that individual client and you're thinking of a free NAS versus something else, in a business situation, I wouldn't do free NAS. If the client's buying it and they're spending the money, sell them a Synology solution. That's a significantly better network-attached storage solution than any other out there. And they have every size to accommodate every client that you want. I just finished this week installing a Synology solution for a shop that does design work in Center City, Philadelphia. They have 12 users and they're all iMacs. I replaced a Mac server with a Synology device. Working beautiful. Gives them all the remote access capabilities they need, the security that they need. We do a backup to an external drive directly connected to the Synology NAS. It's perfect. Don't reinvent the wheel. And don't go into services where you don't have that kind of experience and that kind of background. You are putting yourself at such great risk by hosting critical data from clients. I wouldn't even consider that. And I'm experienced and I know what I'm doing and I've been doing this for years and I would never do that where I'm hosting that myself. Sell someone else's services. Don't bite off more than you can chew right now. Michael, I hope that helps. You could see why I wanted to spend a few minutes answering this. Before I wrap up, I want to play the voicemail I talked about. Give a listen.
Hello, Mike. This is Jay Scholl, formerly of the Delta Sector, also the Great Tech Debate. Long time no see, brother. I'm listening all the time. Hey, I had a question for you. I have several clients that want to know more about upgrading all of their systems to Windows 10. I have one in specific that runs in a ESXi server with several virtual Windows 7 and Windows 8 machines, but I'm stuck on how to assure them, give them a price, or let them know due to Microsoft's inability to give us the set-in-stone requirements that they're coming out with a different version. Any help would be great. Any ideas would be great. Personally, I'm thinking they're just going to have to wait until the deployment, until we can see what's in final and written in stone. But I think this is an excellent question to ask as future updates and operating systems will come out to let everybody know, you know, the process of preparing for an operating system rollout as Microsoft 10. Thanks. Love the show. Always listening. Talk to you later.
My rule of thumb, I don't want to deploy Windows 7 unless it's 4 gigs of RAM. My minimum processor is Core 2 Duo. Those requirements are still okay for Windows 10, but I'd want more of a processor. And if you're in a virtual environment, you can actually bump up the processor. But I would allocate 4 gigs of RAM for each of those workstations. Now, for how much to charge, I'm not sure, because if they all have legitimate Windows 7 licenses, then you should be able to legitimately go through and do an in-place upgrade or just redeploy another image of Windows 10. But to start out, I've never, other than the preview and the Microsoft like technical preview, I did that virtually, and I don't know what they're offering from a start. Like, if you're not doing an upgrade, then you would just have to buy the Windows 10 licenses, and I'm not sure what the pricing is for that right now. And you could just buy a license, and then you should be able to plug that product key in, use that media creation tool that I've mentioned at the beginning of the show, and away you go, and you should be fine. I would not jump the gun, and this is my advice to everybody as I wrap up here. Don't be in a hurry to upgrade if you don't have to. If you're in the business and you do a tech show like I'm doing, or you're a consultant, sure, you got to do the upgrade because you got to go through it. You got to feel the and experience it. But if you don't have to, wait a few months. You have a year to upgrade. Let's let the dust settle. Let's let some updates happen and some fixes. Let's see over the next few weeks and the next month. Let's examine what is happening with all of these upgrades. Let everybody else do the testing for you and then begin. So unless your clients have to go to Windows 10, don't do it. And that's how I told my clients. I let them know, don't be in a rush to upgrade. Let's take it slow. And when we do, we're going to have to do one machine first and test all their software. What if you run into a problem? What if there's an application that will not work? We could shut a whole business down if we upgraded everybody. Go careful. Go slow. Don't be in a rush. That's my advice. Be back next week. It'll be a different date. It's not going to be Thursday night. It's probably going to be Friday or Saturday. And that will be August 7th or 8th. That'll be the next show. And I will see you then. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.